This is Evolutionary Radio. This is your host, Trevor Kuritzen. Joining me, as always, is my loyal and faithful co-host, Steve Smee.
Good evening. What's up, everyone? We got the Mason in the house.
I'm here. We got another fantastic show planned for you. A lot of listener questions, a lot of topics to get to.
First thing is I'm glad Steve's still alive. Steve, what is this, like day 9 of you fasting?
Yeah, it was going to be 5 days. And then you know, I got to the day 5 and I was like, shit, you know, might as well go to day 6. Then I got to day 6. I'm like, might as well go to day 7 and so on. So we're going to keep it going. And I'm actually going to go 3 weeks. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just going to do 10 days. So tomorrow's going to be my last day. But Gandhi did go 21 days fasting. So it's not that hard. It really isn't as hard as people think. Because a healthy human being can go 8 weeks without food. So it's not that hard.
In our last episode, Steve kind of talked about the health benefits associated with fasting and everything. I'm curious, Steve, did you do this fast as a way to lose weight or as to detoxify your body or like a challenge? Like, what got this idea in your head in the first place?
Number one was health, for sure. Number one was health, all the health benefits that it provides to you. And, you know, if you can get, you know, into the second week of a fast, a water fast, the health benefits really start to accelerate. Once you get to week 2, you really start getting to anti-aging. So that's been the number one thing is health. Health, de-stressing, which is a big part of health. You realize, you know, we've talked about it on previous podcasts, people who are really stressed out people, people who are like type A personalities like I am, and, you know, we kind of stress out over every fucking thing. Everything's got to be perfect in our lives. We can't have anything going on, anything that's wrong. We got to fix it right away. We don't procrastinate on things. Everything's done quick. So, I mean, the stress level is just insane. So when you do this water fast, really all the stress gets, you know, taken out of your body, and you really, it's nice. It's all the above: spirituality, appreciating food, becoming more insulin sensitive, not depending on carbs just to function, your brain function, your physicality functioning. So it's really liberating to be able to go work out without having to eat carbs before your workout. And, you know, everyone's like, oh, you got to have carbs before your workout. Well, I've been working out for pretty much almost every day for the past 9 days, and I've not had carbs before my workout, and I've been able to function. And with my workout, I've been able to work. I'm thinking clearly. So it's nice to not be a slave to food. And this is all about training your body to not be a slave for food anyway, not running to the fridge every 2 hours because you're hungry.
Steve, you forgot the biggest benefit. You're supposed to ask what's the biggest benefit?
Yeah, I'm sure there's so many benefits, but what are you thinking?
Biggest benefit is all the money you're saving on groceries.
Yes, that is true.
I mean, every time, like, I'm a smart shopper. Like, I don't waste money on like fancy sauces or these like $15 spice blends or, you know, like, I'm a meat and potatoes type of guy, but even then I spend close to $1,000 a month on food.
Especially yeah, I spent
Canada I spent, is very yeah. expensive.
I actually looked this up, and I spent $950 last month on food. So this has been nice not to spend this money on food. And yeah. I have a water filter at home, so I don't buy a bottle of water. So
no, and I mean, like, when I say I spend about $1,000 a month on food, that's not eating out either. Like, I don't eat, like, I'll eat out occasionally, and usually when I do eat out, it's someone invites me, so they're paying. But I mean, like, I eat out maybe once a month. So I mean, like, that's $1,000 of just like grocery bills. Like, if you want to eat like a bodybuilder, it's really expensive, especially if you're buying like cage-free humane eggs, if you're buying like organic. Like it really.
No, but people are like, no way you spend $1,000 a month on food. Trust me, people spend more on food than they think.
Well, the thing is, Steve, is that they're eating out for the majority of their meals. So when they get groceries, it might only be $100. They're not adding up the fact that they spent, you know, $1,000 that week on eating out, you know, for the majority of their meals. So yeah, anyone who says that, they're not very good with their finances. They're just not adding in all the eating out and the snacking. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Matt, how about you? Because you have a wife and two kids. How much do you spend a month on food, all four of you?
You know what? We go every week. My wife does the shopping, and she probably spends $150 on the three of them, and then probably $150 on what I eat. So it's true. Like, if you're going to be in this lifestyle, food does cost a lot of money. But if you're going out to eat and that's what you do, that shit's going to cost you a lot more. So for all the people that think eating healthy is expensive, if you're going out to restaurants and stuff all the time, you should do a calculation of your bills, because that's really where it costs a lot of money. It doesn't cost nearly as much to eat healthy as it does if you're going out to restaurants all the time.
Honestly, guys,
factor in tips too, right?
One of the main reasons I use protein supplements is just because the cost aspect. I mean, if you work out the serving of, you know, even a good quality whey isolate, it's about 60 cents per serving. I mean, you're not going to get a protein source cheaper than that. I mean, even tuna, even at, like, you know, Walmart, is at least $1 per can. So, I mean, that's one of the ways that's honestly one of the main reasons, aside from convenience, is it's just cost effective. Because, I mean, if you want to eat, you know, like grass-fed beef for every meal, like, hope you got a rich uncle somewhere.
Hey, Steve, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
So you've done a ton of research on this before you just decided, hey, I'm just going to fast, right? Like, you knew what you were getting into. Fasting's been around since the beginning of time. Is there like a go-to like guru on fasting, or did you kind of just do your research from a whole bunch of different places and put it together? And I know after this, a lot of guys can go to your log on evolutionary.org. That'll be a great resource. But what did you use to, you know, kind of put this plan together?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's what you said. It's all the above. There's so many different information out there. If you just Google water fasting, you'll get tons of articles. You get tons of logs from people. You'll get YouTube, some guys on YouTube talking about it. It seemed to be a lot more popular recently. And a lot of people are catching on to this. Even guys like Mark Lobliner, who used to say fasting was bullshit and all this stuff, now they're even starting to get into the whole fasting thing. But, you know, the thing about it is there really isn't a great log out there. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to do this, to help everyone listening, because my log is basically it's going to be thorough. And you guys are going to it's going to be a wealth of information. But the thing is, like, everybody's going to be different when they do this. I started out doing like intermittent fasting here and there, which is fasting till about 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Then I moved on to fasting for 24 hours once a week, or actually once every other week. And then I started doing 24-hour fast once a week. Then I transitioned to, I tried a 5-day fast. And then now I've been doing once a week, 24-hour fast. And now I did a 10-day fast. I'll have a 10-day fast under my belt. So, you know, you got to kind of start out doing the intermittent fasting, get your body used to that. Then you do the 24-hour fast, work your way up. So many people that are close to me said that, you know, they said, oh, you're going to die. You'll die after a couple days doing a water fast. So now that they've seen that, not only am I not dying, but, you guys have both seen my pictures, and wait till you see my final pictures. Cause by the way, since you saw those pictures, I'm actually down another 4 pounds. So once you see my final pictures and you're like, holy shit, like I'm like so ripped and muscular at the same time. Like my muscles are basically bigger and I'm more vascular and I'm more ripped than I've ever been in my life. And even though my body fat was really low as a runner, but now I'm just like so you know, I look amazing. So you'll see it. And the people in my life are like, holy shit. Like, they can't believe, you know, what I'm doing. So they're seeing this and they're asking me like, oh, now I want to fast. And I tell them, no, you can't do a 5 or 10 day fast. That's not a good idea. You really need to start out with just a 24-hour fast. So I would tell you, eat dinner at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock, whenever you usually eat dinner, and then don't eat for 24 hours till the next day at 7 or 8 o'clock, and then see how you do. And you can kind of cheat, because you can kind of put lemon in your water, or you can drink like a greens powder the next day, something like that. Don't drink anything like sugary. Don't drink like apple juice or those naked juices or whatever. Those should have a shitload of sugar. So you want to kind of do it like that. Have some lemon water, maybe a greens powder, maybe a you know, a few, you know, tablespoons of coconut water with your water, you know, so you kind of cheat, you know, a little bit. So you kind of get through it, and you'll start noticing it gets easier and easier to do it. And now if I do a 24-hour fast, like next weekend, if I do a 24-hour fast, it's going to be nothing to me because I did a 10-day fast, you see? So you kind of acclimate your body to it. So that's what I recommend for anyone who wants to copy what I do.
So I'm going to say one more thing, and then we'll move on to our next topic. So fasting is something I've actually been doing a lot of research on lately, partly because Steve is doing this and partly because it's just something that interests me. You have super compensation effects with anything in the body. So for example, your body is most likely to store carbohydrates as glycogen after a workout because you just depleted your body of glycogen stores. What I kind of think might be happening with fasting is because you're not eating anything for so long and you're not eating any protein, that when finally you do eat protein, your body has like a super compensation effect of storing it into muscles. Because I've seen a lot of people say what Steve said is that, you know, you would think after fasting, you know, for 9 days that you'd be really, really flat. And that even, you know, after you ate, you'd still be flat. But a lot of people are reporting that, you know, they fast for 5 days and towards the end, you know, they feel kind of flat. But after eating, you know, just one day of normal calories, once they're done their fast, they're fuller and leaner than they've ever been. So I think you kind of get like a super compensation effect and your body almost like gives you like a hypertrophy response because it's like freaking out because it's like, wow, we didn't have any protein for 5 days. We better store all of this protein we're eating as muscle. So that's an idea. And the thing is there's no literature on this, and everyone has a different definition of fasting. You know, some people think fasting is water, nothing but water. Other people, when they're fasting, will, you know, still take things like branched chain amino acids to prevent muscle loss. Other people like Steve are, you know, taking like greens powders to help the detoxification process. So I mean, technically, Steve, if you're using a detox product like a greens product, that's not fasting by definition, but it's kind of like your spin on fasting. I know a lot of other people who, you know, they'll do intermittent fasting, but they'll have like a whey isolate shake first thing when they wake up just because they're worried about losing muscle, which isn't really fasting. But I mean, like, I guess you're fasting of eating carbs and fats. You're fasting yourself of energy sources. So there's a lot of different ways to skin a cat. So it's kind of like you got to take all the different logs with a grain of salt and everything. Steve, do you have any last comments before we move to our last?
Yeah, actually, you cut off the greens powder and it's just the water fast now. So, but what I'm saying, you can use the greens powder kind of to get you through it. So it's kind of like, you know, you're acclimating your body. But when I am going to come off, I am going to be eating fats. I'm going to be eating fats. It's kind of the whole ketosis theory where you eat fats and you kind of train your body to use fat for energy, kind of to utilize fat for energy.
What I would do, Steve, is the first day off the fast, I would base your diet, the fat sources around medium chain triglycerides, like coconut oil.
Yes.
It's very, very easy digesting.
MCT oil. But the first thing I'm going to consume is grass-fed bone broth, because I want to kind of get that collagen benefit. So that's collagen. The first thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the first thing I'm going to do. I want to kind of coat my stomach. And then my next meal is going to be like guacamole, almonds, nuts, MCT oil, stuff like that. And then like the next morning, I'm going to have a couple eggs with guacamole. So I'm going to really go heavy on the fats when I come off to kind of acclimate my body to that. So it's going to be, fun.
Cool. So our next topic is Rich Piana. I mean, wow. First of all, Rich Piana made headlines of TMZ. So, I mean, that's pretty big. If someone in our industry makes TMZ. So there's been so much misinformation out there. And part of what that is people are all these YouTube guys, they want clickbait. So, you know, they're making YouTube videos saying Rich Piana is dead because they want you to go watch his YouTube video. No, Rich Piana is not dead. No one even really knows what happened to Rich Piana because the only person who was there is his girlfriend and she's not really saying anything. Rich Piana is alive. He's doing better. He's basically in the hospital in a coma. His girlfriend was giving him a haircut and he basically passed out. She freaked out. She called an ambulance. The ambulance came, picked him up, induced him in a coma, and he's slowly recovering. What caused it? That no one knows. It's mere speculation. Apparently, one of the ambulance drivers said that he saw some white powder. But again, you know, who knows? Like, everyone's saying that's cocaine. This guy owns a supplement line. That could have very easily been, you know, some BCAAs, some protein powder that, you know, he maybe he was rushing and had a shake before. Well, I guess he doesn't do shakes. He was having some of his real food before his haircut. And, you know, there was some powder on the counter. So no one knows what's going on. You know, it's mere speculation right now. Until you hear something from Rich Piana himself, I would not take anything that anyone says as a matter of fact, because like I said, it's all clickbait. That's what people are, they're just trying to get views on their YouTube channel. But Rich Piana's alive. As far as I know, he's doing better. So we'll probably get a statement from him in the next couple of days once he's out of the hospital. Steve, is that kind of sync with everything you've read about Rich Piana?
I mean, you said it yourself, Trevor. I mean, all we know is there's so much stuff. There's, you know, all this information that they're being put out. Like, we don't know the facts behind it, but like, you know, I think for sure he's not dead, but I think he's still in the hospital. And I think that, this isn't good.
He is still in the hospital.
Yeah. I can't see this as ending well. Like, so I'm not really sure, we can debate this a lot, but I think that, you know, I think this is a bad thing because if he does survive and he does come out of this okay, what is the lesson that people are going to take from it? You know, are they going to learn?
Do you know what I find interesting though, Steve? Before he went into this coma, he was trying to downsize. You know, he was realizing that, you know, being as big as he was wasn't healthy. He was trying to downsize. A lot of big bodybuilders are trying to do the same thing. You know, Ben Pakulski just announced that he's done competing. He's trying to downsize. Jerry Ward announced the same thing. You know, he's done trying to be big. He's trying to downsize. So there's this huge trend now where people are trying to get smaller and go for more of like a health longevity approach. And I think it's really starting to surprise people because, you know, now we're seeing a lot of bodybuilders die in their early 40s. And it's getting scary. And I think people are kind of realizing that, you know, bodybuilding is not a healthy sport. And if you look at kind of the trend and you know, the social media and everything, everything's going more to like the athletic men's physique look. Like, bodybuilding as a sport is kind of dying, in my opinion.
Here's the thing too. People are getting huge. Like, what does he weigh? Rich Piana was like well over 300 pounds, right? Like, we don't need to be that big. It's an extreme amount of stress on our bodies. And I've heard a lot of talk recently about genetics, that people are getting bigger because of evolution. Our genetics are changing. Well, I have a hard time believing that because we don't evolve for no reason. We, as humans, we have no reason to get bigger. There's no threat to us. There's no dinosaurs coming back. So,
okay. One thing here. Evolution occurs over decades. It does not occur over 50 to 100 years. We have been getting bigger as a society only the last 50 years. That is not evolution. That is basically genetic warfare.
Exactly.
The reason why we're all getting bigger is because there's drugs in all of our food, in all of our dairy, and all of our meat, which when we consume, we intake. And that's why now girls who are 10 years old are going through puberty. That's why, you know, we have guys who are, you know, like 7 feet tall. It has nothing to do with evolution. Evolution takes decades upon decades upon decades. This is literally just the state of modern society. So
that is, that's absolutely true. And that's the thing. So our bodies don't need to be this big. So when you're that big, I don't know what he was doing. I don't want to speculate. You don't just have these things happen for no reason, but when you're doing things to your body and you're that size, these things can happen. So I hope this is a wake-up call. Like, I hope he's okay, and I hope this is a big time, you know, for him to kind of change his ways. But I hope this is a wake-up call for a lot of other people too that see this and realize I don't need to be 330 pounds in the off season and, you know, doing other things that aren't healthy for my body.
Matt, I'm going to say one more thing, then we'll move into our next topic. So I'm fortunate. I train a couple pro bodybuilders. And when it really comes down to it, their life revolves around eating, going to the gym, sleeping, and injecting themselves. And there's a famous saying, if you want to be a pro bodybuilder, the meal's not done when you're full. The meal's done when you hate yourself. And I mean, that's the reality of it. If you talk about, if you talk to any pro bodybuilder when they're done competing, they say, oh my goodness, I hate how much I had to eat. You know, if you listen to any of Jay Cutler's videos now, he's like, oh, I hated being a pro bodybuilder. All I did was eat. Like, so it's to get that big, it's massive amounts of food, massive amounts of drugs, and it's not healthy. I mean, it's just a lot of stress on your body. Every time you eat something, it's a very energy demanding and stressful event on your body. It's just not healthy. Steve, I know you want to say something.
Does this not tie into our first topic?
Yeah.
You know how much I weighed a year and a half ago? I weighed 30 pounds more than I weigh now. And I was eating probably 8 meals a day. And my goals were just get strong. That's all I want to do. Get fucking strong, get big, get strong. Now my goals are health. So now this whole trend that you talked about at the start, everyone now wants to get, you know, smaller and healthier. That's what I've been doing too. But it's almost like they read my mind in terms of they probably went through the same shit I went through with injuries and with
not just my body. You also feel better. It's like, you know how you feel bogged down and exhausted and all you want to do is sleep after Thanksgiving dinner because you just ate a huge meal? Imagine doing that 6 times a day, every single day. Like, it's just uncomfortable. Like,
food, you're a slave to food in that situation. I was a slave to food, trust me. Because if I ever was hungry, I was like, shit, I can't be hungry. I don't want to get weak. I need to get stronger. I need to, every time I step in foot in the gym, I have to add 5 more pounds to my bench. I have to add 5 more pounds to my squat. It was an obsession. And it led to, you know, all these fucking injuries I was getting. And it's, you know, and it's not sustainable. Eventually, you're going to have to stop that. Eventually.
You're like that guy who takes his protein shake with him into the locker room and chugs it when he's done his last set because, you know, he can't wait 30 seconds to, you know, be done his workout because he's going to miss his anabolic window. But anyways, we'll get into our next topic. I'll talk about it first because I think I'm the only one on TRT. I think Matt, I think you actually just started TRT, so then you can chime in after. And then Steve, the only one who's still got nuts that work 100%, you can go last. So we've got quite a few people asking about, you know, when is the right time to start TRT? So the first thing I'll say is, like, this isn't an answer. This isn't a question where there's a right or wrong answer. You know, it's very, very different. It depends on your goals, your age, things like that. I personally think, you know, getting on TRT should be like your last resort. I don't think you should do it until you've been doing enough cycles that, you know, your HPTA is permanently shut down. Because even just being on like a low dosage of testosterone, like a TRT dosage, it does put you at elevated health risk. You know, you're at an elevated risk of prostate cancer. You know, whenever you're injecting hormones into your body, you're basically playing God. So I started TRT very young. I started TRT when I was about 22. Before starting TRT, I took every approach possible to try to restart my HPTA. You know, I used Clomid. I even used HCG. I literally was off everything for 2 years with no luck. And my system was so shot that when I took Clomid, And this was doctor prescribed Clomid, you know, so this is straight from a pharmacy. No one can go on here and say like, oh, your Clomid is probably fake. I took Clomid and my FSH and LH didn't even increase. So that just shows how fried my body was. And basically the endocrinologist I work with basically said like, your system's shot. Like I've been doing this long enough that the fact that you were on Clomid for 2 months and your FSH and LH didn't even budge, your system shot. So I started TRT, doctor prescribed, very closely doctor monitored. Every 3 months, I have to get blood work done. They want to make sure everything's good, everything's in check. My cholesterol's good. If you're going to go TRT, I really would work with your doctor on it. That way, you know, especially if you're in Canada, you can get blood work done. The blood work's free. Most people have health insurance, so then your TRT is covered anyways. And then when it's pharmacy grade, you can travel. It's never an issue. You know, if I'm ever gone for, you know, 2 weeks or 3 weeks at a time and I need to bring with me my stuff, I can just bring it. It's never an issue. It comes from the pharmacy. It's got my name on it. So honestly, just for the ease of travel, I think that would be the best way. But I don't know, like it's really up to you. I mean, like the best approach to not doing TRT is to basically do a cycle, run a PCT, and then run a SARMS bridge. That way you'll keep growing, you'll keep making progress off cycle, but you're not going to suppress your natural testosterone production. So that's kind of my advice. Matt, you recently decided to get on TRT. So why did you make that decision? And what are your thoughts on this topic?
So for me, the biggest thing I want to stress is I don't feel this is just a number decision. So too many times I've met guys, talked to guys at the gym, talked to guys on the forums, and they say, you know, my testosterone levels are at the lower end of normal. Should I go on TRT? And I say, well, how do you feel? Well, I feel fine. Okay, well, then you don't need TRT. So when we talk about what the normal range is, the normal range is where your body is producing enough testosterone for you to function normally. In the range of, I know most of you guys are in the States, so we'll say the 300 to 900 NG per DL. So we'll say that's the range. So for me, if I'm at 400, that's close to the lower end of normal. But if I feel fine, that just means that's what my body needs to be normal. You know, Trevor might be 700 out of 900, and that's his normal. But that doesn't mean that I need TRT. That just means that my body requires a lower amount of testosterone to function normally.
I'm going to jump in one thing quick.
Yeah.
The reason I always recommend someone who's before doing their first cycle to get blood work done before ever touching steroids is because then you know what is normal for you. Because then let's say you get your blood work done before your cycle, but your testosterone is only 400. You do your cycle, you run your PCT, you get blood work done again, and you're like, well, my testosterone is 400. That's kind of on the low side. Maybe I didn't fully recover from my PCT. No. That's a normal testosterone level for you. So it's a really, really good idea to get blood work done before ever starting steroids. Because on the converse, let's say you got blood work done before starting your steroid cycle. Your testosterone was 900. You naturally had really high testosterone. After your PCT, you get blood work done, your testosterone is like 350. That's in the normal range, but that's not really normal from you because you did a huge dip from 900 to 350. So that's just a piece of advice to all our listeners thinking about doing their first cycle. Spend the $60 if you're in the States. If you're in Canada, it's even free, so you have no excuse. I mean, no one likes getting blood work done, but I mean, this is your health. And the more, I literally have all of my blood work done saved in a folder. So I can look back and I can see, hey, what did my blood work look like 4 years ago? You know, how are things progressing? Have my cholesterol levels improved? Have they gotten worse? Like, it's really good to have records of all this stuff. Sorry, Matt, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it makes a ton of sense. So for me, what it requires is a multi-symptom approach. So not just low libido. If you have low libido, that can be attributed to a ton of different factors, okay? I'm not going to get into all of them because that's a whole other show we could do on that. But you're going to want to have a whole bunch of side effects. Low libido, you're going to want to have no morning wood or very sporadic. You're going to want to have low energy levels, fat gain where you're not eating anymore, but you're just gaining fat. You want to have a whole bunch of those things together And when you have those together and you get blood work and your testosterone's lower, to me, that's the time when you go on TRT. And that's what happened to me. It started off with just minor libido kind of issues. And then as other things kind of came into play, that's when I realized, hey, this is what's going on with me. And then like Trevor said, I went to my doctor and talked to her and we worked through it. So that's how I ended up doing it. I know Steve's still going strong. So what do you do, Steve?
One more thing, Matt. I want you to say one more thing. So a lot of people kind of think like once they get on TRT, they're going to turn into Superman. Their sex drive's going to be through the roof. You know, like they're going to turn into the Hulk overnight. So just explain, like, now that you're on TRT, you probably got a little bit of an increase in libido. Maybe your body composition is a little bit, but I can tell right now by looking at you in the video, you're still the Matt I knew a year ago.
Absolutely. You know what? That's the biggest misconception of this whole thing. Guys that think they're going to go on TRT and it's like running a test and trend cycle. That's not what this is like, guys. This is just to help you get to where you're normal, where you have a normal libido, where you have a good amount of energy. You're not like fatigued all day where you shouldn't be. That's where it's going to get you. Exactly. Now, you do hear the guys say it's life-changing, and those guys were the guys that had really, really, really bad symptoms. But to answer the question, no, it's not going to make you Superman. You're not going to blow up. That's not what this does.
The whole point of testosterone replacement therapy is to make you normal. So basically, you're at the point where your natural testosterone production is so shot, it's below the normal value. All the TRT dosage is going to get you into that normal range and make you function like a normal human being. So you're not going to turn into Superman. Your libido is not going to be like a porn star. You're just going to be like an average guy, you know, feels pretty good, you know, has good energy, you know, can build muscle, but it's nothing like running a steroid cycle. Steve, I'll let you chime in because you're the only one not on TRT.
Well, a couple things that I want to bring up. I'll take a little different perspective on this. You guys pretty much covered a lot of good information, but my perspective is probably a little different. I want to take a little different perspective, like I said. First things first, Trevor, the reason you had to go on TRT at such a young age, you didn't mention, I don't think, is because you abused steroids at a young age.
Okay, so I started bodybuilding very young. I started weight training when I was 13, did my first show when I was 15. I did really well. You know, I moved up the ranks quickly. When I was 18, I got a coach. He basically said, you know, Trev, you got everything it takes to turn pro, but you're going to have to take steroids. I said, steroids, what about the side effects? He said, the only side effect is results. I'm some 18-year-old kid. You hire this guy, you trust this guy, you look up to him. So I started taking steroids. From when I was about 18 to 21, I did not come off. I was using huge dosages. You know, I was running like a gram of test as the base of my cycle and adding in, you know, like Trend and EQ and Anavar. And I was also using growth hormone. Like I was literally a pain cushion. So the reason I pretty much shot my HPTA is because I started steroids way too young. I used way too high dosages and I never came off. So hopefully people learn from my mistakes. You know, it is an injection I have to do once per week. So it's not like the end of the world, but that's an injection I'm doing once per week for the rest of my life. So whenever I'm traveling, it is a pain in the butt. You know, I have to pack my testosterone. I have to drive to a pharmacy, find a way to get needles, find a way to get, you know, alcohol and cotton balls. So just something to think about, you know, if you're an 18-year-old guy thinking about doing your first cycle. Steve, sir, go ahead.
Yeah, so, I mean, when you start using steroids young, you open yourself up to HPTA dysfunction. When you abuse steroids at any age, if you're spending most of the year on steroids, that's abuse. You need to be spending, I'd say, two-thirds of the year need to be off of steroids where they're not in your system causing suppression. So that's how you avoid having to go on TRT. Start using steroids at around, you know, your very late 20s, and then stay off of steroids two-thirds of the year. And that's what I do. And I, you know, don't have any issues coming off. You keep your cycle short, you know, 12 weeks, 13 weeks or less, and then you make sure you cycle off properly, run a proper PCT, all that good stuff. So that's what you need to do to avoid it. But, you know, the second thing I want to say is TRT is an interesting thing because you have one end of the spectrum where you have doctor prescribed TRT where doctors are hesitant to put people on TRT because of the side effects, specifically the heart strain, because so many people have to go on TRT who have poor lifestyles. So their testosterone levels are low due to their poor lifestyles, not their poor lifestyles are due to their TRT. So I know so many people on TRT who look like shit. They all have guts. They eat fried food every day. They don't take care of themselves. They don't exercise. So TRT is not really going to help you anyway. So what's the point of even being on it? So that's why a lot of doctors are hesitant to prescribe TRT to people. Number two, you have the other end of the spectrum. You have people who do self-TRT, and they're on like fucking 500 milligrams of testosterone a week, 1,000 milligrams of testosterone a week. That's TRT for them. You know,
I was actually just talking to Boston Lloyd, and he's like, yeah, man, I'm cruising right now. I'm letting my body clear out. I'm like, okay, what are you taking? He's like, I'm taking 2 grams of test.
Like, yeah, exactly. So
there's one too many zeros there for that to be TRT.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's running 10 times the dosage he should be running to be on a TRT dose. So those are the both end of the spectrum. What it boils down to, look, it's your own fucking body. You know, you really need to, with all the information out there and shows like this, there's no fucking excuse for you to turn your balls to grass and have to go on TRT for life in any situation. So, you know, just be smart about it. If you do want to go on TRT, hey, it's your body, that's fine. You know, do what you want to do, but at least educate yourself on this stuff because there's so much information out there now. And no, you can't just hop on Clomid or Novadex and restart your HPTA magically like some people on forums think. Trevor gave the example when he said that he ran Clomid and Novadex from a doctor, and the doctor even admitted, hey, you're not going to – it's not doing anything for you. If his FSH and LH didn't even go up from zero, then it's not doing anything. So you cannot just solve the problem by hopping on a bunch of drugs and magically restarting your HPTA. It's just not possible.
Matt, do you want to introduce our next topic?
Yeah, sure. So we got a good listener question. So we had a guy who has been in this lifestyle for a while, you know, training, eating well, and he's got a new job where he's going to be traveling quite a bit. And he was asking, how do I transition where, you know, I'm not going to be home, I'm not going to have my gym and my normal food. How do I transition to where I'm going to be in hotels a lot and still be able to train and eat? And does it make sense to ever use any PEDs or how do I transition into this new job? So I thought it was a great question and said we'd bring it up on the podcast tonight.
Do you want me to go first? I probably travel the most.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm gone most weekends for modeling jobs. The nice thing is they're normally like weekend trips. So like I'll leave Friday morning, get back late Sunday night, Monday morning, that type of thing. So I'm only gone a couple of days, so it's not too bad. Anywhere you can find a drop-in gym, it's actually kind of cool. You know, you get to train at, you know, various different gyms. It's never the same as your home gym because, you know, it's new equipment. But if you're basing your workouts primarily on free weights, you know, like a squat is a squat. So I do that anyways. You know, I normally train with mostly free weights. The only machines I really use are maybe like a seated calf raise or things like that. So it really doesn't affect my workouts too much. And it's kind of cool. You know, you're in a different atmosphere all the time. The biggest thing is diet. Restaurant food is expensive and it sucks. So whenever I'm traveling, I literally pack, you know, cans of tuna, rice cakes. Oatmeal is a lifesaver because every single hotel has a coffee maker. So you can boil water, pour it over some instant oatmeal. A good whey isolate shake is awesome. Almonds, a greens powder, tuna, even beef jerky is decent if you can find one without too much sugar. And then, If you have a carry-on, like if you're only going for a couple of days, I always pack, you know, fruits and vegetables that don't require refrigeration. So, you know, carrot sticks, celery sticks, apples, things like that. He didn't say if he's traveling internationally or not. So he also didn't say how long he's traveling for. So, I mean, if you're like, I normally do my TRT shots on Sunday, but I mean, let's say I'm traveling, I don't get back to Monday. I just do it on Monday. It's not a big deal. Like if you're running long esters, it doesn't really matter if you miss your shot by a day or two. So not really an issue. For using things like orals, if you're traveling domestically, like within the country, you can just pack them in your check bag. If you're traveling internationally, I would not use PEDs. If you're going to be gone for extended periods of time, it's just not worth the risk. You're looking at life sentences if you get caught traveling internationally with steroids. So unless you have a prescription for it, it's just not smart. So that's kind of my two cents. Also, you generally, if you're traveling for work or if you're traveling for a modeling agency or anything, you have some say, like either your employer is booking the hotel, you're booking the hotel yourself and they reimburse you. So just do a quick Google Maps search, you know, like search the hotel name and then search gym and see, you know, how close there is a gym. I always try to find a hotel that has a gym within, you know, walking distance or like a 2-minute cab ride. So I can either go first thing in the morning before my shoot or go after my shoot if it's a really early call time. You're in charge of all this stuff, you know. All, like if you can find a hotel that's close to a gym and close to a grocery store, I mean, you got it made. That's actually what I did for my last shoot. I was literally within walking distance of a grocery store and a gym. So I didn't deviate from my diet at all. I went to the grocery store. I bought some pickled hard-boiled eggs, you know, so stuff like that. So I'll let Steve go and then Matt, you can finish up.
Well, I mean, some hotels have decent gyms too. And a lot of times those gyms are really empty. So you can pretty much just like have the run in the mill in those places. In terms of like restaurant food, guys, it's simple. You know, you can have a meal like a burger or something, that's fine. But you want to make sure like your other meals are like something like a salad. If you're forced to eat at restaurants, get a salad, go easy on the dressing, or, you know, ask for like apple cider vinegar. Cider, apple cider vinegar, though, you can throw that on. But salads are a really good option in restaurants if you want to stay away, because a lot of the foods that they make, like the burgers and the chicken and the steak and stuff, they put so much oil on that shit. And, you know, you can just tell them, hey, you know, can you bake me this chicken and just put no oil on it, you know, and they'll do it for you. I mean, when you order something at a restaurant, the waiter, waitress writes down what you want and they take it back there. So make sure you tell them, hey, you know, I don't want any butter. I don't want any oil on my food. And then when it comes to a salad, say, I don't want, keep the dressing on the side. So, I mean, you can still eat healthy at a restaurant. You just got to open your mouth and don't be shy and tell the waiter, waitress what you want exactly. A lot of times, you know, you tell them, hey, yeah, I want a house salad. They'll bring you a salad. They'll put it, tons of dressing on it, like Caesar dressing, and they'll put croutons, and they'll put cheese, and they'll put bacon, they'll put all this shit on it. So, I mean, you just got to tell them, hey, just a plain salad, keep all that shit on the side. This way you don't ruin your salad. You go from a salad having 20 calories to a salad having 300-400 calories when you drench it with all that crap. So, I mean, so, you know, you can still eat at a restaurant. Find a supermarket that has, you know, options for you where you can kind of eat healthy. You know, a great place is Whole Foods. If you're near a Whole Foods, they have a hot food bar and you can go there and just get whatever you want and just package it and then bring it back to your hotel room and just pop it in the microwave to warm it up. You don't even need a fridge in your hotel room, but a lot of hotel rooms have those little mini fridges. So you can kind of store the food in there. Or you can buy like a cooler and just put the cooler full of ice and keep the food in there for however long you want. And when the ice melts, you just put more ice in there. So you have a fridge right there. So there's a lot of different options. There really is no excuse. We just have to put in a little effort. A lot of people who travel, like salesmen and stuff, they all have guts. And my uncle has been a salesman for years, and he's really out of shape now. He used to be a pretty good bicyclist back in the day, but now he's out of shape. He's got a gut. It's horrible. And whenever I hang out with him and he always takes me to these restaurants and he eats like these huge meals and stuff. He's eating a huge breakfast, a huge lunch, a huge dinner. And that's what's going to happen. So you can't make excuses, and you got to be smart about the food choices you make.
Matt?
Yeah, it can be tricky. I'll tell you what I think, and I'll put some of my personal experience into it. I travel for work, not a ton, maybe 4 or 5 times a year. And what I recommend, the very first thing you do when you get to your hotel room, is you go shopping. You go get some food. Okay. You want to have things there in your room that you can eat because you don't want to rely on restaurants and that. Now, here's a little trick, and I won't take credit for it. I'm pretty sure I heard this from Chris Gethin the first time. Just call the hotel, tell them you're diabetic, you need a fridge for your insulin, and they will give you one at no charge. Okay, so if your hotel room doesn't come with a fridge, just tell them that, you'll be taken care of. You want to have a fridge. So this is kind of what I would do. I would stock up on your basics that you can eat quickly and that are going to be relatively easy to consume. Like Trevor said, tuna, bring your whey protein with you, things like that. Go to the store, get some fruits and vegetables, bring some oatmeal, just some staples, okay? When you have breakfast, have your oatmeal. If you have to go down for work, like I do, I'm required to go to all my meals with my work people. There's always going to be like hard-boiled eggs that you can eat. So that's fine. You can have that. With lunch, typically it'll be, for me, like a buffet-style provided lunch. If that's what you're dealing with, fill up your plate with protein and salad. You'll notice nobody touches the salad. It's great. So you'll have a good option there. What I do for dinner is you always have some time back to your room before, you know, your evening, whatever you have to do. Eat your dinner before you go to dinner. That's what I do. I eat my own dinner. That way, when I go out, I'm not hungry. I'll just get a salad or something just to be, you know, social. So there's ways around it. And you know what? Steve's exactly right. If you look at these people that travel a ton, that are in sales, like a ton of people are overweight, because what are you doing when you're out with clients? Like, you meet them at a restaurant, you take them out. That's kind of what you do. So you really have to be very dedicated, because it's so easy to gain weight. You know, like, I'm in my car most of my work day. So if I eat bad, I'm just going to, my gut's going to explode like really quick. So just take every precaution you can and plan. It's all about planning ahead. And that's the best thing I could tell you. For training, a lot of these gyms, if there's a gym close by, they'll give you a 1 or 2 day membership for free or really cheap if you say, you know, hey, I'm thinking about joining. So you can use that tactic once in a while too, or you can just get a week pass. You know, let them know, hey, I'm in town, I'm traveling, and they'll give you a good deal. And, you know, that's the best way. If your gym doesn't have a good gym, or if your hotel, sorry, doesn't have a good gym, then do that. Get that week pass and train at a gym. If your hotel does have one, like Steve said, it's likely going to be empty almost every time.
Okay, I'm going to say two more things, and then we got two more topics, and we only got 10 minutes left. So I'm going to blast through the next topic, and then we'll all chime in the last one. So two tips, when you're going to a gym and you say, hey, I want to try the gym, they're going to ask to see your ID and they're going to notice that the ID is from a different province. How you get around that, you said, I just moved here. I'm looking for a gym to train at. I don't want to sign a contract until I've tried the gym. That way they'll give you the free drop-in. Otherwise, it's going to cost you like $10 for a drop. I mean, it's not the end of the world, but I mean, if you want to get away with getting a free, you know, 2 or 3 day pass, that's how you do it. That's what you say. Second thing is, you know, I've told clients before, you know, when you're at a restaurant, make sure that you order a salad without dressing, make sure that you want, you know, no sauces, no condiments on your meals and everything. They're like, oh, I don't want to bug the waiter. Remember that the people at the restaurant work for you. They want a good tip. The cook is going to make whatever you want because he wants you to tip well. He wants you to enjoy it. He wants you to come back. So it's not a hassle. This is what they do for a living. I promise, however complicated you think your order is, the person at the table next to you is making an order 10 times more complicated. So don't feel bad about it. You should enjoy it. You know, if you're going out, enjoy going out and make sure you get what you want. So our next topic is basing your workouts on your personality type. And this is something I'll just talk about quick for a couple minutes, because this is something I've been reading up a lot on lately. And it's something I've noticed just having so many different personal training clients, is that, you know, you have people of all different personalities. Like Steve said, I'm a very type A, go, 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 go person. I've always got a million things on my to-do list. From the minute I wake up to the minute I go to bed, it's like go, 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 go. You have other people like Matt who are a little bit more laid back. They're more relaxed. They're more chill. You know, Matt's the type of guy, he could grab a beer, watch a hockey game for 3 hours. I can't do that. After an hour of sitting on the couch, I need to go for a walk. I need to do something. Like, I'm just one of those like really high strung people. So for people like me, we thrive off of adrenaline. So for a workout style that I really enjoy is something that's very fast paced, slow rest periods. It's go, 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 go. It's something that's going to really get my heart rate up and get my adrenaline pumping. For someone like Matt, he's more skill set minded. He does better on mastering fundamentals. So Matt would like a workout program better that, you know, really focuses on perfecting your form, you know, not doing supersets, making sure that every set you do is executed with perfect form. Or I like, you know, I do this set, immediately I go to the next set. So these are just some suggestions, because when it really comes down to it, people always argue, you know, what's the best workout? And the best workout is the one that makes you train hard, you enjoy doing, and you're consistent with. So, I mean, if you're doing a workout style that you hate, it's not going to be productive for you because you're not going to want to stick to it. So, I mean, there's really no magic workout program. It's just doing something that you enjoy and something that makes you train hard. So our last workout topic, I'll let Steve go first because he hasn't gone first yet, and Steve's the expert when it comes to all this stuff. One of our listeners wants to know, stacking Carterin and SR9009 for fat loss. What exactly is the reason why you'd want to stack the two, and what's the best way to go about doing it?
I mean, they'd be great for endurance and fat loss as well. And really, the thing about this is a lot of bad information out there about SR9009. It's kind of laughable, some of this the stuff that you read on these other forums from these so-called gurus who really don't know shit about these compounds. They don't really understand how they work. I mean, SR9009 is not something that you take and it's designed to be in your system 24/7. It's something that you take ahead of a workout to really get an edge, because it's a very short half-life. It peaks very, very quickly and then drops off very, very quickly. GW501516 is different, Carterin. It has a much longer half-life, so you can dose it just once a day, and it's in your system 24/7. So if you dose it once or twice a day, it's in your system 24/7, it's going to continuously be working, and it's got a much longer half-life. So the way to use them together is I would dose the Carterin just like once a day, like whether it be in the morning, evening, whatever, and then dose the SR9009 like an hour, hour and a half ahead of your workout. So now you get the best of both worlds. That the Carterin is going to be working in your system 24/7, and then the SR is really going to be peaking right around your workout. So you get a nice boost to your workout, and you'll get that fat loss boost as well, because the way these compounds work is they basically fool your body into burning through fat stores. And really they increase your VO2 max and everything for your endurance. So you'll get a tremendous endurance boost during your workout, and you'll get a tremendous boost in your fat loss all throughout the day, and especially during your workout, because they're both going to be working your system in synergy. So that's really the way to use them. You see these guys on forums say, oh, you need to take SR9009 five times a day or six times a day. It's laughable to me to read the foolishness of these people. If you work out once a day, then you dose it. That's just that once a day. If you work out twice a day, then you dose it twice a day. Let's say you work out 8 o'clock in the morning, and then you fuck your wife at 7 p.m. So in that situation, you'd run it before your morning workout, and then you run it before you fuck your wife, like an hour, hour and a half before. Boom, that's it. And then you're running that Carterin once a day, and it's in your system 24/7. So that's the way I would run it. So I don't understand this what you see on these other forums from these guys telling you, because they think it has a short half-life, so that means that you're supposed to just run it like every 2 or 3 hours. It's silly to me.
Matt, I'll let you go, and then I'll close up the show.
So I've used both of these a whole bunch of different ways. So from my experience, when I used Carterin alone, it's one of my favorites. I get a huge endurance boost after only a couple days, and I love it. I've used SR9009 exactly like Steve said not to do. I've dosed it 6 times per day, about every 2 to 3 hours. And what I found was it wasn't much different than being on Carterin. So I've done it that way. I've also stacked them that way, and I didn't find it to be that much better than either one on its own. Recently, I've tried it the way that Steve just explained. I've used my Cardarin once per day, and I've used my SR as my kind of my pre-workout. And I will tell you that is by far the best way to do it. If you're thinking of testing it out, just do it this way. Do it after 1 or 2 days off or after a couple light workouts, and then do a leg day. If you do a heavy leg day and you're first starting out that Cardarin and SR together, you will be blown away at how good it is. Because I don't know about you guys, but on my leg day, I'm out of breath. I'm sweating like crazy. It takes a ton out of me compared to my other days. So you really, really notice it, and it only takes a few days. So that's the way that I would stack it. Like Steve said, I've done it every way. I found that 20 milligrams of Cardarin is perfect, and I found SR9009. If I'm going to do it once per day, I will do 20 milligrams. That'll be my dose. If I'm going to exercise twice that day, I'll split it, and I'll do 10 for the one workout, 10 for the other. But I kind of try to keep it to 20 per day. I wouldn't go more than 30. I think after that, you're kind of just pissing out your money. So that's what I recommend.
So what Matt said, that's basically my favorite way to use the two products. And it's pretty expensive that way. So basically you take your Cardarin one time per day. I'd probably just take it with breakfast, you know, something easy, you're at home, you won't forget. And then take the SR9009 about an hour before your workout. So in that way you got a fat burning effect and an endurance boost from the Cardarin throughout the day. And then right before your workout, you get a real nice boost in endurance and fat loss from SR9009. The misconception with this whole half-life SR9009, you got to dose it multiple times per day. Okay, SR9009 has a short half-life, 100%. So if you want to maintain stable blood hormone levels throughout the day, you have to dose it throughout the day. Absolutely. Now, for things that are hormones, like oral steroids, you want to do that because you don't want to be getting side effects. However, because Cardarin and SR9009 are non-hormonal, are not stimulants, the fact that it's out of your system, it doesn't matter. You're not going to get, you know, low libido side effects or anything like that because it's not a hormone. So that's where that misinformation comes from. You know, you'll have something like D-ball, which has a 4-hour half-life, and you'll think, oh, well, because D-ball has a 4-hour half-life and I need to, you know, split up my D-ball dosage into multiple dosages per day, and SR9009 has a 4-hour half-life, I must have to split up my dosages into multiple dosages per day as well. No, you're comparing apples to oranges. I mean, they're completely different things. One's a hormone and one's a PPAR upregulator. So don't worry about that. Basically, long and short of it is just take the SR9009 before your workouts. If you're working out once per day, just take it once. If you're working out twice per day, take it twice. If you're a total animal and you're screwing your wife 4 or 5 times per day, like Steve said, then take it 4 or 5 times per day. It's been another really great episode. We appreciate all the listener questions, guys. If you guys got any questions and you know you want us to answer them, go on the evolutionary.org forums, post them up. We'd love to answer them and get them on the show. For your host, Trevor Caritzen, for my co-host, Steve Smee, and for my second co-host, Matt, also known as Masonic Bodybuilder on the evolutionary.org forums, it's been another episode of Evolutionary Radio. Live your life, look good doing it. We'll be right back.
Thank you.